Welcome to Activate Yourself with Geeta Sidhu-Rab, where we feature otherwise normal people who, because of events in their life, have turned left and done unusual, inspiring, incredible things, like build a business, become a happiness expert, marry a prince, create an empire, or like your host, set up a health and wellness business, Nosh Detox. Here's your host, Geeta Sidhu-Rab.
My name is Geeta Sidhu-Rab, and this is Activate Yourself. And, you know, there's life with death, life after that, death instead of life. It's all there. These are conversations that are cultural, they're human, they're different. And I spend a lot of time, as my mother gets into her 90s, thinking about death. But I've only ever once, about 10 to 15 years ago, had somebody come on as a guest of this podcast who had a near-death experience. And he's a very old friend of mine, and he had seven near-death experiences because he's excessive and he likes to do everything to the max. He got struck by lightning. He fell into fire. I mean, like, there was nothing that hadn't happened. Today's guest is a little more reasonable, but has had a life-changing experience because Jacob Cooper is joining us today. And he had a near-death experience when you were like 3 years old, I think. Is that right, Jacob?
That's correct. Over 30 years ago, I'm just about to celebrate my 36th birthday next week. So, you know, it's been a minute in human years, but it feels like just a millisecond in many ways. And it's just time is a funny, you know, construct, you know, in so many ways.
Yeah, it really is. So you lost the ability to breathe. And that, I mean, that has to be, and my son, when he was very young, died in my arms and was resuscitated after like 5 minutes, not 5 minutes, obviously, because his brain wouldn't be functioning. I think probably it felt like 2 years, probably around 1.5 minutes to two. And it's a really interesting, because when you ask him what happened, and he was like, oh, I was just there and I could see these flowers and the grass. And it was really interesting seeing what his version of that was. How was it for you?
Wow. And how old was your son when this occurred?
He was 9 months old.
9 months old, and he was able to have language to describe. Yeah, you know, for myself, it was, you know, it's very hard to concretize a lot of these things in words, you know, because I'll explain. For instance, light in this planet, it's really based on the colors of the sun, and those are the language that we have. And when you're out of this physical realm, it's very hard to have descriptive language to it. But the best way I could describe it is imagine the most climactical, highest euphoric moment that you had in your life times like a billion. You know, that's what I felt. And there was no worry. There was no fear. It was just a sense of timelessness that I did experience, which really, really is concurrent with a lot of near-death experiencers. When they come back, you know, they'll ask for the number one word to describe God or the universe or, you know, the afterlife, and the only word that most of them come back saying is love, which is quite interesting, you know. So that's really what I experienced, and it's very different than this world. You know, this world is you're loved minute to minute on what you do and what you don't do. You're kind of judged. You get the great grade on school. You feel really good. You don't get the great grade. You feel like a failure. And over there, you're really seen for your inner light and your inner being. And that was a beautiful sensation that I had over there for sure. But it's like all these things that we're always connected to, and a lot of the blinders were removed, and I was able to have a lot more of a greater understanding of these energies that we're internally bonded to.
Yeah. So, because I mean, if you're not looking at the human and the judgments and prejudices that we have as humans, it's more looking at what the soul represents.
Yeah. No, we could all get very human, and I am certainly guilt no different than that. But the soul really is able to, you know, Wayne Dyer had this saying, if you take an orange, you squeeze it out, you get orange juice. And I think if you take each and every one of us, that you squeeze out our essence, you get this beautiful light, you know, that I think that is who we are. And that's what I experienced in my NDE, that I just wasn't my body, I wasn't my thoughts, I wasn't my emotion, wasn't my chronological age. These are all things that I was experiencing, but what survived all those things, what continued was this eternal soul that I was able to remember full blown in my NDE in September of 1993, which is a day that sticks with me for every day of my life. It, never leaves my conscious memory.
Really? Did you, because I think about this with my son, did you, is that how it was? Did you grow up constantly having it at the front of your mind? Or is it as an adult it came back? Or how did this function?
It was always there. It's a really good question that you bring up, Gita. And what I would say is, it was always there, but I struggled with it for a long period of time. And I'll say the reason is, most kids are programmed to fit in, to be normal, and just kind of fit in line. Being weird is, oftentimes stigmatized
Painful.
earlier on. And as an adult, you recognize the coolest damn thing you could do is to be a little bit weird, right? That means you're making a difference. It means you're being uniquely your unique self. But it took a long period of time for me to have acceptance of this. It was always there, but a lot of my childhood was kind of like a beach ball where I just tried to bury all these things down to just play sports and be a kid. But no matter how hard I tried to push it, it would just come up to the surface and come up in memories of my near-death experience, or a lot of times what's called after effect gifts, with which oftentimes near death experiencers have, which oftentimes is intuition, different world orientation, values are changed from, let's say, material focus to more of a spiritual focus orientation. And so, there was a wisdom that I definitely was able to carry over that wasn't something that I was ever taught within this lifetime, that went beyond the bandwidth of my social experiences and learning and development.
So you go through this near-death experience, you go through life never feeling quite like you fit in because of it. And then does there come a space and a time when you get older where you kind of think, okay, I kind of have to let this kind of be processed, or this has to be able to come up now. It's obviously time to deal with this. Is that right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And some kids who have near-death experiences rather shatter from the rooftops and tell the world. But there's a specific individuality that we all have, and I think each person is different, and not everyone wants to share everything with the world. I've more so been a private individual throughout my whole life. So for me, getting out publicly was a little, certainly vulnerable and not really within my temperament. But for me, there was a lot of different things that allowed me to do this. And actually, I'm celebrating this particular week my 10th anniversary of going in front of a crowd and speaking about this publicly, which, I say is the biggest fear that you can do is, the top five biggest fears that people have is public speaking and death. And I'm doing two of those in one shot. So it wasn't easy to do that. But I think for me, what allowed me to do that was recognizing as a gift and not a curse. And that took some time. And as Picasso says, the meaning of life is to find that gift, and the purpose of it is to give that gift away. And once I recognized this as a gift, it really allowed me a lot more resilience and strength and a momentum to bring this forward to other people. But it took some time and a lot of support systems from people around me. But most kids who have near-death experiences, based on hard research, take around 2 to 3 decades to fully synergize their experience and externalize, their experiences. So it takes a lot of time to outer process it, but it doesn't mean you don't understand what's going on an inner level, if that makes sense.
Why does, like, it's so interesting because I'm talking to you and I'm thinking of my son,
Sure.
because it never occurred to me that my son had a near-death experience, but he did. But because I was
Wow.
there, I was, I don't know, I've never, it's the first time I've actually kind of put those two thoughts together. Why does it take so long to process?
That's a good question. I think, like I said before, even as an adult, right, the vernacular or the bandwidth of language does not do justice to your experience. And the vowels, the sounds, the colors that we have here are all very incongruent or just minuscule to what you experience with eternity on the other side. Even the construct of time that we have here is not present over there. So just this three-dimensional reality is a lot of incongruence with the 5D reality in many ways. Combine that being a kid. You ask a kid to talk about their feelings. I work as a therapist. It takes a lot. Now, ask them to talk about something as profound as a crossing over experience. I could understand that being a lot more difficult. Kids take time to really develop language. It's kind of like a great musician and getting used to a guitar. It takes time for the two to be in harmony with one another, but once that happens, it's a beautiful thing. So, I think language for kids, it takes some time, particularly something that's very hard to describe, in our language for various different reasons that I hopefully tried to illustrate here,
Yeah, no, I can see that. I can see it's just I've never had the conversation with him about this. I've never had the conversation because it's something that I've been a public figure all of the children's lives, and so I've often spoken about the experience of being on the other end of it. And I've
Well,
never asked him how it was for him.
I would also say, and it's nothing personal, but it's a big vulnerability. And
That's what I'm seeing when you're talking. That's what I'm
yeah,
understanding.
it's when it comes to vulnerability, some people will give out vulnerabilities in a cheap way and tell everyone. But that's a dangerous path because not everyone has a bandwidth of understanding of your vulnerability. And not everyone, is there to support you. Some people, if you're feeling like you're drowning, they're going to take your head and try to dunk it further. There's a lot of vindictive people out there. So I think it's smart for kids to keep it close to their chest because a lot of people, when they don't understand something, they could go two ways. They could be quite curious with that thing, or they could really stigmatize and ostracize, that thing they don't understand. So I think also vulnerability plays a role. But I train a lot of parents to really process, kids having not just near-death experiences, but past life memories, which is a lot more common than you would think,
Oh my God, so much. Okay,
for
wait, we have to
kids,
go for a break and then we're going to come back.
but you got it.
This is not the journey I was expecting on this particular show, but we're going to go for a break now and we'll be back.
Awesome.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So we're back, and yes, my son used to channel when he was younger, and I still have a book that he must have been 8 years old,
Eight years old, huh?
and 7, 8 years old. It was over the 7 year mark, and he had a book, and he came back from school, and he said, "Oh, the teacher told me to give this to you," and I was like, "Okay," and I remember this because the youngest was one and banging on pots, so he must have been 7 or 8, and he said, and he wrote a piece which said, "I am Thoth. I am here for my people. I come," you know, Thoth, the Egyptian,
Yes, I've heard, yeah.
God, Thoth. And he says, "I am Thoth, and I'm here for my people, and my people have suffered greatly, and I've come to help them in their liberation," or something. I mean, I had goosebumps talking about it. And I was like, huh.
All right.
Okay. You know, and there was a moment of holy shit, right? There's a child over there, a 1 year old, banging a pot with a wooden spoon, and there's another one coloring in there, and then there's this guy writing about Thoth because that's what he wrote at school when they said write something. And I was like, I've never connected all those things with his near with I mean, you say near-death
With
experience.
it, with
Died.
it, yes, and many times when people have near-death experiences, it opens up Pandora's box of memories and their connection to the spirit realm. So that's something that I also write about in my books in terms of my own past life memories. And the work that I do now as a regression therapist, where I help,
Yes, you do that.
adults and children, and families understand these things. But yes, it is quite common for kids to be very matter of fact in their past life memories without having an agenda. Kids don't have agendas. They'll say things very, what you see is what you get many times with them. They're very pure a lot of times. And so that's quite interesting that he had these profound memories, which I say interesting because most people, when they have past life memories, they live very kind of mainstream, typical lives. They have like a pitchfork and they're working the land. So for someone to have degree of prominence, that's really cool. I think sometimes behaviors may be on the surface irrational, but the reasons behind that are rational. Everything has a reason, everything has a source. And for your son to
Oh,
be
I
saying these
completely.
things, there's, they're not. The behaviors on the surface may seem off, but the reasoning and the source behind them is deeply rooted in truth. And I think that's really cool. And ultimately, I think it was Henry Ford who once said that talent is not a result of one lifetime, but as a result of many different lifetimes in accruing
No, I
different
agree with that
skills, which
entirely.
is pretty cool.
But I do think that when I think about it, the thing about feeling special, right, when I'm thinking about what you're saying, is such a double-edged sword, which is when you're saying in terms of vulnerability. Because if you go down the route of I'm special because, you have to stay being special in order for you to have meaning. But when you kind of integrate your experiences as who you are as a person, you can then take the good and the bad and the up and the down with it, and it's an absorption and an expression of who you are. And I think it's, I remember thinking that I never wanted him to think that these were the things that made him unique, that these were the things that made him special. But you know, I think he must, there must be an element of processing, like you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I just say he just may be a little bit different. And sometimes I think a great gift that draws people to spirituality is recollection, is memory on some stronger level than that. You know, memories of that we are more than just these bodies, that we come from in a different place. And I think that's the draw that allows people to engage in spirituality and to be open to maybe a different paradigm that they were exposed to. But I think everyone is unique and quite special.
Their
But
own
you don't
ways.
want to get too blinded by that, because we all have a shadow to address too, which really allows us to broaden our light and also to have a deeper understanding of compassion for those that we, meet on our paths too, and relatability. So, with a great light comes a great shadow, and that's a responsibility that we have to work. But you make, I think a big stigmatize about past life or memories is that it's just all doom and gloom, or it's all pathology, or it's all just issues
Really?
that
I've
you
never
had.
heard
And
that.
some people believe that, and that could be true. As a therapist, sometimes you see people with conditions that are not justifiable, explainable, and you're able to go to the root of that, from physical health to emotional dynamics to interpersonal to familial, whatever that is, and they will have a lot more closure. But gifts are things that you really do also carry over and can be enhanced. How do you explain? I don't know. He just won the Masters, but this golfer named Rory McIlroy,
Yeah.
he, as a child, was just on television, much like
Did you see
Tiger.
her, the girl hitting the, was it his daughter, you mean?
No, but I was talking about Rory when he was a young child, much
Oh,
like
okay, but
Tiger,
his daughter now did the
his
same
daughter,
thing.
yeah. Much like Tiger, I know he's in trouble now, but when as a kid, he was on these big talk shows, and just from like the crib, he was just playing golf. And you can't, that's not something you could develop in like one lifetime. Or Mozart at the age of what, 3 to 5 years old, was just this brilliant musician. That just doesn't logically add up. That does not make sense. That has to be something that you carry over from something else. So talents are a part of it, even intuition. I have a colleague of mine that was doing a regression, past life regression. And all of a sudden, right after she got out of it, her intuition exploded, where someone came up to her. She started giving that person a reading, and that person sent her an email and said, "That night I was about to complete suicide, and your reading and what you said saved my life." And since that moment in time, this person's been giving readings, and she's helping out a lot of people. So, tapping into the higher mind and carrying over a lot of these past life gifts could help us in this lifetime. But I say epiphanies by themselves don't change you. What you do with them has potentiality to change you in the world. So that's cool.
Yeah, no, I agree. I is I'm my religion is Sikhism, and we grow up with very clear views around karma, dharma, and reincarnation. So I've just always grown up with these as
This
concepts.
isn't anything new to you. Yeah, this is, yeah.
No, I'm like I'm slightly flummoxed because I'm like, why would this be a problem? You know what I mean? Like my children grew up just. I mean, they do tell me it was a little bit of a peculiar upbringing, which I don't agree, but that we just were very open about the entire concept of spirituality, of reincarnation, of understanding that we had gifts. Dharma is that concept where you come in with traits, you come in with ideas, you come in with overlays, and karma is kind of what you do with them in this lifetime, you know?
Yeah,
And it's just a beautiful concept because we only ever talk about karma, but let's take the entire concept. And my children, after I grew up very clearly understanding that, and I think there's a certain freedom in understanding that there is so much that we don't see because we have the ability to lean on things that you don't. Because if you think that everything you touch is the only thing that's real and it's going badly, then you think, oh, well, I'm screwed because the only thing I can see is bad, right? Whereas if you have a belief that there's more, then what you see is not all that there is.
Yeah. I give this example all the time with my clients. I'll ask them to point to themselves and they'll point to their body. And then I'll say, well, what happened to that body that you're pointing to when that body was an infant or that body was 5 years old, 10 years old? The same body that you're pointing to, that's gone. That's no longer there. So we hold on to this physical reality that's something that's constantly changing. And I live my life by this quote that says, that which is real can never change. What changed was never real. That's a very powerful quote. But having
No,
a
I
near-death
agree.
experience, I had an understanding of what's real is eternity, the soul, love. Everything else is an experience, but not something that, lasts. And I think we hold on to a lot of temporary things that don't, that have a time frame in many ways.
We're going to go for a quick break, and when we come back in our last segment, I would like to talk about your books actually and the work you do now.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so we're back. Talk to me about your books, because you've written two books, right?
Two books and I'm working on my third, so Holy Trinity, whatever you want to call it, but yes, two books. They've been published with the publisher in California. And yeah, when I look back on my birthday, I always try to reflect on where I've been, but it doesn't make logical sense for me to write books. I was always a struggling student and I was put in the lowest possible non-accredited class in a community college for reading and writing. It was the lowest
Oh,
possible class, and I was the only kid out of like 30-something kids to get out of that thing, and I graduated, summa cum laude, everything, got my master's, 4.0, everything. But I think what helped me was people who believed in myself. And there was one time where I wrote something, and my aunt said, "Wow, you're a good writer." And I'm like, "But the belief that I had was that I'm horrible, that I'm stupid, that I'm this, that I'm that." I mean, you change your beliefs, you change your life. And all of a sudden, I grew up with a different belief, and as a result, the behaviors were changed. So, I mean, for me, my way of writing books is to give back to all the authors have really helped me in that dark night of the soul, and just a way of giving back to all the people in the library that I say, I don't know if libraries will be around when I cross over, but I say, if you want to bury me, just bury me on those bookshelves, because I hope that someone will pick that up and maybe it'll make a difference in that person's day.
so what was the premise of the first book, and how did that lead then to the premise of the second book?
That's a really good question, Gita. The first book came right in the throes of the COVID pandemic. And for myself, I think, it was a storm and everyone had their own unique boat, obviously. We're all kind of thrust in similar storms. But for myself, I saw a lot of the parallels with what was going on with COVID and just this proverbial collective near-death experience that this planet was having. And there was a lot of themes of people suffocating and respiratory. And for myself, almost 30 years ago, I had something similar on a micro basis. And I said, now you have to use what you had to kind of speak to the moment, stop hiding it. And so for me, that's where Life After Breath came from. It was all about what I learned in my near-death experience was really about the power of surrender, which really saved my life. I let go of my suffocation. I surrendered to this breath of eternity, which we're all created from. And my hope was, when people were talking about being out of sorts, being out of their own breath, for this book to give people restorative breath and to propel their lives forward during a very, difficult time. And so I was quarantined and I just used that time as productively as possible to just, chop wood and carry water, as I say, and work in this, first book that came out in 2020, I believe.
That's amazing. And then what's the, and then Jacob's Ladder, which is your second book?
Yeah, I know that's kind of like a allegory for biblical Jacob, who had, the dream where he saw the angels not only on the upper rungs of the ladder, but down, on the first and second rung, and he was, according to the Bible, almost having his own near-death experience and running from for his life and stuff like that. And I had my near-death experience right by a ladder in a playground. So there's a lot of symbology and allegory with my own NDE and, perhaps biblical Jacob. But when you think of a ladder, you think of each step where you're at, the ability to be mindful, but also in many ways, the higher you go, the more you could understand and see. And so the wisdom of Jacob's ladder is very much that dharma. It's the meaning. It's the lessons from my NDE. Where, my first book is more karma, it's more the story, and the second book is more the essence, the meaning, and more the spirituality, practicality. Because I think a lot of people, when they hear near-death experiences, they feel a sense of disenfranchisement, and they want to have self-induced near-death experiences. And what I try to do in my books is to really help people to learn that you don't have to go through all the, I'm not going to say hell because there is no hell, but you know what I'm saying, all the trauma, all the pain that I went
Pain.
through, which was very scary and real in terms of suffocation, and as a result, all the other things I had to process. And it's just an easy way for people to connect to these things without having something traumatic unfolding to their in their lives.
I do think that makes a big difference. One of the problems I always have is when we have to go back and unpack lots and lots of pain to move forward. And actually, the 4-year-old pain that you carry isn't actually necessary for you to bring with you to the person you are today, but often it's the fear of that the 4-year-old is holding that we're taking forward, and that does create a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it, and I work in the field of mental health these days, but I work with kids a lot, and I see just how big these problems tend to grow when the bodies tend to change. But also a lot of it too is, like you mentioned, is inner parenting work. When kids have emotions that they have and parents gaslight them, or they don't understand what they're going through, all of a sudden there's these heavy emotions that they just don't know how to regulate. And so that could lead to hurting others or hurting themselves. And then the greatest skill that we could learn is how to self-regulate these things if that was not present with us in our childhood, or we didn't have the bandwidth of understanding with, our external forces. So I think that's where spirituality really could help out, is this trust that no matter what you're going through, you're going to be okay. All is well, was well, will be well if it doesn't feel well at the moment. And that's really wisdom that I've gotten from my NDE that, could help people. Because when you're going through trauma, fight or flight takes forward. It comes to feel like a real danger. Or if you don't experience that, it feels like every single lens that you go through, there's something that's going to harm you. And when you have this knowing that you're going to be okay, that allows you to really navigate, the changes that come up into the surface a lot easier.
It's so interesting because what you just said made me think of the fact that a lot of times when you talk about parents that gaslight their children, it's funny, like we are a different generation. So our parents didn't really care about gaslighting us.
They
Like
didn't.
we
They didn't. That's more of a newer term. I think that came out
Yeah,
like
and
10, 15 years ago, and it's been really probably overused, or a lot of people just don't understand it per se. But
and I was looking, I'm looking at the fact that there's a place where you're the children, I there's this thing that Oprah did about the parents not being parents and children being cut. What is it? The children stop speaking to their parents, something like that. And they're talking about protecting their peace. And I'm like, that's wild. Like there is a place where protecting you're so fragile and so vulnerable that you have to create a little cocoon in order to survive within it. How do we then survive life?
I think that's where, because you're right, life on life's terms is not a cocoon, and that's what you're seeing these days with a lot of parents, where I think they've taken too much to an extreme and they haven't really leaned into things. The brain will say, hey, if I'm not feeling comfortable, I'm just going to isolate myself. But actually, depression goes up and anxiety goes up when you isolate for prolonged periods. And I think
Completely.
what's and what's needed is that short-term spike of anxiety or depression to go up when you're facing something that's hard, but long-term that slope tends to go down. And so that's where really that education piece in parents that think very short-term in terms of how they handle their kids or how their kids understand
But also
things.
for the kids, I think children need to learn
Kid,
that they need to build capacity
absolutely.
to live,
Yeah,
and that
they need to.
resilience, I hate the word resilience in terms of bouncing back because I think it's about growth and development instead. But I do
It's a
think
nice
that you
refrain,
must build your capacity in order to have the capacity to manage life. Because when you narrow it down, so look at all this, what did they call them? Those people that sit in front of computers all day and don't move, right? And they have no
Right,
life
right.
other
You have
than that. And
almost like vegetables or yeah.
yeah, there are some very negative terms for that, but you know, there are people that it's all too difficult. But where we grew up, you were forced to, I'm a raging introvert. You were forced to go out. You were forced to talk to people. You were forced to be polite. You had to develop those skills, whether you liked it or you didn't like it. And they have stood me in such good stead my entire life. Whereas if I'd been allowed to just hide at home, God knows what would have happened, right?
Right. Yeah. And I think people need to, like, when I work with parents and kids, let's say, are afraid for school, it's about, yes, validating and also reassuring that, you got this. I know it's going to be hard, but you can do this. Once parents start to give in and they say, all right, it's, you're having a hard day, let's stay home. That leads to, that's what we're seeing now these days in the mental health field is a lot of school refusal, school avoidance from a lot of accommodation, parents giving in, and their kids just kind of knowing how to placate their parents. And I think parents need to understand part of the role as a parent is very much biological. You think you look at, animals in the jungle, like the tiger doesn't say, hey, it's going to be hard. I don't want you to hunt. I'm going to do it all for you. What the hell is going to happen to the tiger
They
cub
kind of throw
when
you out.
you're going to get killed, right? I see some of my neighbors feeding feral animals. That's nice in the moment, but you're not allowing those muscles to be exhausted and developed. And there's a degree of dependency that could happen. Let's say you leave. What are they going to do when you're out there? So I think there's a biological survival element that parents can provide in addition to helping their kids thrive as well too. Obviously, with having different information, skills, and understanding. So it's a unique role for sure.
No, I mean, absolutely. How is it, Jacob, that people can find you?
People could find me. I have a website. It's jacobelcooper.com. I have, all types of services, newsletter, and you could also find me on socials. I'm on Facebook, Jacob Cooper LCSW, and Instagram, Jacob Cooper LCSW. And anything that comes to me that's, inspirational, I try to get out there as much as possible because, you just never know who's listening and what they're going through. And that's what this is about. It's really about, for me, when you have a near-death experience and you're giving another crack at life, you come back differently and you want to just make all the difference you can and to be a light bearer. And some days are better than other days, but I try to hold true to those values. Yeah.
Good. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your time.
This is fun. Thank you for having me. Yeah.
My name is Peter Sidhu-Rob, and this is Activate Yourself with Jacob Cooper. And I hope you enjoy the episode, and we'll be with you again soon.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our goal was to give you pause, make you think about your life, and inspire you to say, wow, what if I tried to do that? If they can do it, so can I. Did it work? Let us know by finding us on social media at Gita Sidhu Rob or at Nosh Detox. We upload new shows every 2 weeks here. And if you start to miss us, check us out on YouTube.